Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Somos Mas, the official podcast of Somos Mas NM, and your source for the latest news and notes on New Mexico United and the New Mexico Runners. My name, of course, is Seth Bidoff. Joining me this evening, the one and only Earl Nieto. Jacob Terrell should be along shortly to hop in and join us in our discussions this evening. I want to take a moment to thank each and every one of you for popping into the streams as you do each and every week and listening to the podcast feeds as our show goes live later in the week. We do appreciate all of that. And I got to say, Jacob's timing with baby Maggie, if he's ready, he is ready. All right. And I got to say, Jacob, appreciate you hopping. I know you've been really upset this weekend. You've been doing a lot of crying, not only because New Mexico United lost by a final score 4-0 on Saturday, but also because you're trailing our bracket challenge standings.
Oh, no. I couldn't care less, my friend. I have watched exactly 5 games of college basketball before the tournament. So if I would have been winning, it would have been a minor miracle.
So we teased it a little bit last week. We do want to hop in and give a quick look at our bracket standings. We'll go ahead and share our screen here. Oh, hi, Maggie. We're going to try to be quiet for the baby.
She can't hear you guys.
She can't hear us. All right. Well, here we are. Here are our standings through the round of 32.
Why are we doing this?
Just because.
Was this Seth's idea? I bet it was Seth's idea.
No, this was Earl's idea last week.
Actually, it was my idea last week. Okay. But that was before the Lobos got wrecked and sort of my bracket.
Yeah, Earl, what happened? I mean, it can't just be just the Lobos.
So it's not just Lobos, because obviously that same night, or that same weekend, we turned around and we watched New Mexico United play. So it's a New Mexico tradition to, when it rains, it pours.
Who else messed up your bracket, Earl?
Shall we think of Lobos, the girls? Lobos destroyed my bracket because I had them running deep. Who else? I can't remember. Who else wrecked my bracket?
Well, you had Kentucky.
Texas Tech. Kentucky
going to the Final Four. Or Elite Eight, I should say. You had Kentucky doing the Elite Eight.
Which is weird because I don't know about that. I didn't have Kentucky going to Elite Eight, did I?
Yeah, you did, right here. Marquette over UK.
Oh, I riveting did. Podcasting. Okay, I did.
Yeah.
Riveting podcasting.
I know. Isn't this great? But yeah, Earl, you're still in contention. I won't say that you're out of it yet. Not yet. You know, no one's out of it. I will say, though, I said this in our group chat the other day, I actually had JMU over Wisconsin and changed it like last minute.
I like how he's in first place, but he's still trying to get credit for a move that he almost made. Get out of here.
I know, right? But no, I've been fortunate. The farthest I had going losing, I had Auburn. I had Auburn and San Diego State both going to the round of 32. But that was it. I haven't lost anywhere from the Elite Eight yet. I've been pretty fortunate. I'll tell you about it. I had Kentucky going to the Elite Eight. So I've done okay with my bracket this year. So
your AI bracket, you mean?
No, this is all completely, you know.
Well, you're a robot, so if you did it, it counts as AI.
Yeah.
It might be. It might be considered AI. So but yeah, so that's where we're at with our brackets. I'm sitting in first currently. Harry sitting in second, Earl in third, and Jacob in last currently. Ooh. But your round of 64 wasn't terrible, Jacob. Your round of 64 wasn't terrible. And and Harry took a big hit in the round of 32 as well. So, well, we got obviously more basketball coming up later this week, Thursday and Friday. So stay tuned for some of that. We'll see what happens. You see our champions here. Jacob and myself both went with UConn. Harry and Earl both went with University of Houston. And I want to ask real quick before we hop into our actual news. There's a rumor floating around that Coach Pitino may be headed to Louisville. What do you guys think about that?
Which one?
Richard Batars.
Let him. That's how it goes.
You sound like such a defeated New Mexico fan. It makes me sad, Earl.
No, that's what I'm saying. I mean, that's how it goes. We saw Alford make a good run in the tournament 2016, I want to say, maybe 2014. And then Money Talks, Bullshit Walks. Obviously, he got offered something bigger with Nevada.
No, he went to UCLA.
UCLA.
Yep.
So once again, Money Talks and Bullshit Walks. So if they offer him more money and he takes it, then he's not
taking the job yet. Let's just calm down, Earl. Have a little bit of positivity. My goodness.
I'm just expecting it. I mean, we already saw Jamal Mashburn put in for the transfer portal, so
that's fine. He can go.
My thing about Mashburn though is when he's good, he's good, and when he's not,
he single-handedly won us the game where he hit 2 threes against. Oh, I can't remember now. But he pretty much single-handedly lost us more than 3 games by just shooting like 1 of 7.
That's what I'm saying. When he's good, he's good. But when he's not, he's definitely not good.
Speaking of not good, Saturday, obviously out at Charleston, out at Patriots Point, New Mexico United was not very good. I mentioned it a few minutes ago. New Mexico United lost on Saturday by a final score of 4-0 to a Battery team that none of us were very high on last week. So looking at this match, I sat down, I watched it. I was very hopeful. I thought, okay, we looked okay in week one. We didn't look as good in week two. I'm like, and watching what I did of Charleston Battery, I was not convinced this was a team that was really going to threaten. I questioned where the goals are going to come from. I questioned how good that defensive unit was going to be, particularly when you replace a lot of players at the core of your defense and your starting goalkeeper. And you bring in a guy who's been a journeyman keeper his entire career, never really had a shot at being number one. And from the opening whistle, we looked bad. Earl, you and I were kind of talking before the show, like you watch this match and you look at how this thing played out. And we look at how much we talk about in the midfield, how important the midfield matters. And in this match, there was no midfield to speak of. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong here, but our midfield was non-existent. But I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that we could not play ourselves out of the back third, out of the defensive third, without giving the ball up.
Yeah, no. So I went back and I did some searching. Christina, I am so glad you're reading my mind, because that is not the worst loss in club history. Although it was probably the worst 90 minutes of pain I've ever watched in my life. And I have watched some pretty bad things. This was actually our second worst loss in United history, only behind the 5-0 loss that we had to San Antonio back in 2019. So no, not our worst loss in club history, but our second loss. And you could even argue the Phoenix 5-2 loss that we took was almost as bad as this, but I mean, let's get into it. I mean, this match that we watched was definitely one-sided. It was 100% Charleston Battery offense and Charleston testing the United defense for sure. Charleston looked eager to win this one. They wanted it more than anyone else on the pitch. I mean, it was obvious. They didn't want to give United any kind of space to get going or any kind of space to even pass the ball to our team. And every time we got something going, they countered the heck out of it. They were on it and their defense pushed it and they definitely played. I want to talk about our keeper because that's kind of been my thing.
Let's get into that. Obviously, this surprised everybody. Chris Shakes getting a start.
Yeah, so it surprised me that he got the start. I'm happy he got the start, but I think it was kind of a let's see what these guys, what Charleston can do to you. Obviously, I think we downplayed Charleston a little bit too much, but Shake's debut was as bad at the office as it could have been.
Yeah, you know, you look at, and I'll back the clip up here. Here are the early minutes of the match, about 13 minutes in. He actually had, you know, his first save of the game. And, you know, you thought that maybe he would kind of, you know, settle in. And to start this match, I didn't really take issue with how he was playing. You could see him pushing the team up the field. You could see him pushing them up, and we weren't going to be playing out of the back like we were, you know, the week prior against Rhode Island, which put us into a whole lot of problems. But you see, especially on this play here, we're trying to play out from the back. We have a defensive miscue, turn the ball over to end the third, and then you look at the spacing here, and I have a hard time faulting Shakes for this one. But Earl, talk to us a little bit more about this decision here. Did we get any sort of word? Because I know I reached out, and there wasn't any sort of indication as to why Alex did not start this match.
I didn't even bother to ask. Obviously, there's a guy that gets paid a lot more money than I ever will to make that decision. Obviously, everyone that we have on the team, and we've said before, is definitely first-team caliber. Starting lineup caliber, definitely good. Shakes, I mean, like I said, it was a bad first day of work for sure. fucking hate Harry. But all of the goals that he gave up, that Shakes gave up, was, I don't blame any of them on him. Really don't blame him. So the first one, the one that we just saw right there, I mean, he got first timed is what happened. He definitely got hit the first time, and then ball went in. The second one, it was a free kick. I mean, those you have to get lucky on. You have to know exactly what you're doing to put them in. And two of them went in on Shakes. So that happens. And then the fourth one, I mean, Shakes just got caught dancing. I mean, the first shot went off the pole. And then the rebound landed right back where he needed to be. And once again, just got put in. So, I mean, Shakes, I still have a lot of faith in him. I just think that he had a bad day. And I'm hoping bad days lead to better ones. But I know 100 bad days lead to 100 good stories.
Well, okay. That's not where I thought that was going. But it's always hard when you make your debut. Now, this is a guy who came out of Penn. He was highly touted, one of the best goalkeepers, you know, in the conference. And so we had heard that he had been potentially pushing Alex for the number one spot coming into the season. And I mean, Jacob, I don't know about you. I don't know how much this performance you put on him. Now, obviously, we've seen some of the miscues that happened throughout the evening. I mean, just watching the highlights here, because I don't know how much of the match you got to see on Saturday. You know, how much?
I watched all of it. Reason.
Okay. So when you watch this, is this on Shakes? Is it on the defense? Is it on the game plan? Like, what went so wrong for United in this match?
Oh, I think you can't. You lose a game 4-0, it's not on one aspect of the game, right? It's going to be partly on Shakes, partly on the game plan. I think a lot of the first couple goals' fault are on the defense and the back line. We had multiple just like on their first goal. It comes in on a throw-in, and then there's just bukus of space for them to not only just not only get ahead to it and flick it on, but then he flicks it to another player who's wide open in the 18 box who just buries it because he's wide open at like the 16, 15 yard line and is one-on-one with a goalkeeper somehow. And so that one, in fact, all four of them, really, I can't put on shakes as far as his ability. I don't think Tambakis really could have stopped any of those shots. Maybe Tambakis could have put his defenders in better positions at certain times, especially like on that first one. Maybe he could have been like, hey, whoever it was on that far side needs to collapse in a little bit more and leave that far post open for right now. So maybe Tambakis could have done a better job there, or a more experienced USL goalkeeper could have done a better job there. But at the end of the day, it's turnovers, lack of closing out people in space, and then a PK there at the end to just put a nice little shitty bow on it. I think we just saw in the highlights here a little bit ago. So they score fairly early on. Shakes gets a fantastic save in like the 22nd minute. And then we have a golden opportunity in like the 48th, I think it was an extra time of the first half. And Gloucester beats the keeper, but the defender's there to clear it off the line and keep it 1-0 going into halftime. And I think if that goal goes in, then we're looking at a completely different ballgame for the second half. And I feel like once we got down and came into that second half, I think the beginning of the second half was probably our best run of form in that whole match for 5-10 minutes. And then once they score the second and then the third, it's just, you see heads hanging. I think part of it's a byproduct of traveling cross country 2 weeks in a row. Charleston is also obviously a very good team. Having gone to the USL Cup last year, losing to Phoenix in penalties and bringing back a lot of key players. Obviously they did lose some, Barajas and Muse, most notably, but they still have a ton of talent there. And to me, it's a 2-0 loss that we then quit on and ended up putting in a couple more goals, which isn't nothing. Obviously, I don't like to see that, but I think this is one of the ones kind of like Charleston did last year, where they get beat 7-0, like Harry mentioned, and they just kind of said, oh, wasn't our night, guys, and they threw that film out the window, and then they still went on to have a successful season. So this by no means kills us. I think staying on the West Coast, going to Phoenix on Saturday, where it's, you know, just a few hour bus drive and then we're done, or maybe they fly down there, I'm not sure. Take care of that, and then we're, you know, not having to travel cross country and play on the East Coast, and I think that helps us quite a bit. So I expect a better performance Saturday.
Well, and we'll just really get to the travel aspect of this here in a minute. But and while, you know, the Charleston loss last year that you've mentioned and Harry mentioned, it was 7-0. You look at this, and yes, 4-0 early in the season, there's still a very, very long way to go. But you can't ignore it. You can't ignore the defensive miscues. You can't ignore the lack of control on the ball. And I don't know if it was because we were playing on turf, but then again, we played on turf last week. I don't know what it was. Like, we didn't respond well to the pressure in Rhode Island. We didn't respond well to any of what Battery was doing on Saturday night. And there just did not seem to be any stretch of the game where we looked comfortable whatsoever. And, you know, you talk about, you know, Alex not being in between the sticks. We talk about there not being, maybe there's not enough communication, maybe not enough leadership. You've got Kalen out again.
Can we talk about that for a second? Because he's been out two matches in a row and we have looked atrocious at times in the back with him out. Last week, I get, you know, it was a late scratch. We didn't expect him to be out. He wasn't on the injury report on Friday. It just kind of happened, from what we understand, before the match sometime on Saturday. So that one I kind of get. But I think, to me, this can kind of show the importance of somebody like Kaelin Ryden, who, yes, maybe he's lost a step. Maybe he's not quite as physical as he used to be, but the man is a very good organizer, a very good leader, and obviously getting the captaincy this year and not having him out there, I think can attribute to some of what is going on right now. And so hopefully he's not out for too much longer and we can.
Before you hold your thought, because we do have this guy who is the newest member to Team Earl. So carry on.
Shadow, we appreciate you listening over in Germany. We really do. We appreciate all the interactions, all the comments and the love you show us over on Twitter. So we do appreciate you staying up and at least giving us a little bit of a listen tonight. And we hope you enjoy the pod later in the week.
To be fair, he is not Team Earl. He is Team Chael Sonnen. Because he says you look like him. If I looked like
read that comment person, again,
he would like me better, but I don't. I'm my own person. And so
actually, Harry's got it.
So no, he's changed. Shadow has changed. It says, he has put hashtag Team Earl on multiple posts, much to my chagrin.
So to Christina's point, I mean, Ryden's our captain for a reason. Now, even with that, you know, Ryden being out multiple weeks, we don't know the situation there. Last week, he was a late scratch. We don't know what the issue was this week. We don't know why Alex was out this week. I asked, I reached out to the club. I asked, and the answer I got was, I don't know. That's the answer that I got. So when you look at this, when you look at that at the lack of leadership from just those two guys, you see a change in system. We went from a four at the back last week to now a three at the back here on the road against Battery. Now, that kind of bucks tradition to where you go to where most clubs go on the road and you play a bit more defensive. You know, you tend to play a three at the back at home for some clubs. Then you go to a four or five at the back on the road. But here you see Coach Quill going with a more aggressive, in a way, formation, and it didn't pan out at all. We didn't see an adjustment. Now, obviously, with Harry playing where he was, I expected him to be rotated back to drop into more of a four at the back, but it wasn't really working. And then you've got Will Seymour at the back, and that wasn't working. So we've got veteran guys on this team, but we just looked off. We looked like we were not on the same level. We weren't as prepared for this match. We looked like we were just, and like what Justin says, didn't seem to follow through after both the attack and defense. Now, I mean, to be fair, there were a lot of really poor passes. There were a lot of really poor touches. And even without Kaelin and Alex in there, somebody has to step up and say something. Somebody has to take that lead. You've got Harry. You've got Sergio, who's been part of this team for several years. You've got Greg Hirsch, who is now a veteran on this team. You've got Will Seymour, who's been here for a few years. Somebody has to step up and, you know, reorganize that. Even if your number one's not back there, even if your captain's not back there, there's a reason you have vice captains. So I don't know. Again, yes, it's very early, and yes, we can write this off as a one-off, hopefully. But in a season where you've got a lot of hope and expectation coming in, this is not the kind of performance you expect to see.
I'm going to point back to the 7-0 thumping that they took, that Charleston took last year. Like, good teams can have bad days, and I am still of the belief that we will be fine. It's not time to panic after one really bad game and a questionable game at Rhode Island. It's still early. It's still a brand new system with these players. It's still a lot of changes being made. Then we've had some unlucky injuries and whatever happened to Alex. And so I'm not freaking out. I also think, like, because there was some complaining about the squad rotation from week one to week two and then week two to week three, that seemed to be like non-injury related, like Akale starting and looking really good in the first match and then coming in the second match and not playing or not starting at least. And so I think what is happening right now, it's kind of like in a soccer match, right? You got like the first 15 minutes where the teams kind of like feel each other out. and the next 15 minutes where you try to like impose your will, and then halftime comes and there's adjustments. I think the season as a whole is kind of like that as well. And so right now I think we're trying to find combinations that are really working, trying to find secondary combinations that can be played if some people are injured or been ran too many times. And so I think we're just in kind of a weird lull here. We'll be fine. We'll eventually find an 11 that really, really works with a couple of key guys that can come in and make differences. We saw Brucey out there, which was nice. He was out there running around wreaking havoc like Brucey does. And so it's still bad. Don't get me wrong. I wasn't happy in the moment. I'm still not super thrilled about it. But at the end of the day, it was what it was, and we move on.
When you watch this, when you look back at the highlights, now obviously there aren't very many, if any, highlights for things that we did other than, you know, we'll save there at the end. Are there any positives to take away from this match? Is there anything at all that made you go, okay, I like what I'm seeing out of X player. I'm liking what I'm seeing out of, you know, this rotation? Because, you know, aside from Brucey coming in and giving a shot of energy, aside from Herbert coming in and giving, you know, getting some minutes, I really didn't see anything here, because Greg Hurst was non-existent in this match. Sergio Rivas was non-existent. You know, our touches were really bad this match.
I think Dayon stood out for me offensively anyways. The two chances that we had, one was here. I think I said Chris Gloucester earlier and I meant Dayon Harris. Had a good look and put a good ball on frame. And then on the Hurst chance right before that, he's the one that makes the run, gets in behind, fights off a defender, gets possession, plays a good ball to Hurst, who's crashing up the right side and creates something there. And I think he's a player that we saw when we got the transfer from Tampa Bay. We saw him come in and say, or at least I said when he came in, like he probably is going to be an everyday starter, I would think, with his talent level and the way he produced at such a high level club like Tampa Bay. And then he didn't start week one. He looked decent week two against Rhode Island. And so I think he's finally starting to feel comfortable and move on. And I also think that, like you mentioned it earlier, but playing turf, it's a little different, especially when you compare it to our field. And so it's tricky, man. It's tricky. But Harris is the one that stood out in a positive light for me. And I'm not going to say Shakes had a good night, but he did make a couple of nice saves that athletically were pretty impressive.
Earl, any positives on the evening for you?
The only positive I have is that we're not El Paso.
That is very much a good thing at this point. Although, to be fair, I think they might have actually played better than we did on Saturday. So
yeah, but they still don't have a win, so they can go to sleep.
Speaking of, and I appreciate you bringing that up, let's take a quick look at the standings.
Seth just hates us.
The standings aren't bad for us, honestly.
No, they're not bad at this point. But no, you take a look at the West. You know, you've got five teams unbeaten. I do apologize. Orange County, Sac Republic, San Antonio, and Monterey all sitting on 5 points after the weekend. FC Tulsa has only played one match, sitting on 3 points. They are unbeaten so far. Oakland and New Mexico sitting on 4 points. And then you've got everybody else. Memphis sitting on 3 points with a win and a loss. Rising picked up their first win. Vegas picked up their first win of the season. And then the winless El Paso Locomotive and Switchbacks FC. And we'll look at the Eastern Conference here in just a minute too. What stands out to you guys in the Western Conference here through the first three matches? Is there anything that's surprising? Is there anything that's really kind of stands out as to where we thought they might be, or is it still way too early to tell?
It's way too early to tell.
It's obviously way too early to tell, but that's not fun, guys. Come on, let's get in here. Sacramento, San Antonio all were expect it to be pretty good. I had Orange County a little bit low. I'm always lower on them, and they always outperform what I think they're going to do. So that's that was expected for them to be above where I had them. I think the first one on the list that surprises me is Monterey Bay, and not only because of where they actually sit, but I've watched a couple of their matches because I watched them play Rhode Island this week, and then I watched them play El Paso midweek a couple weeks ago, and they just look really good. They look really dangerous. They look composed at the back and are playing really good soccer, which I didn't expect. I don't think anybody really expected. So they're a surprise on the positive side. And then, of course, the surprise on the negative side to me has to be our buddies over in El Paso. Winless through four. I think they were lucky to get the draw against Monterey Bay. Probably a little bit unlucky not to get a result against Vegas, but they haven't looked nearly as good as most people thought they would, myself included. I think I had them firmly in the playoff position, and that hasn't happened yet. And now, remember last year, they started 0-3 with three losses at home, I believe, too. So they're not out of it. They also had like a, 13-14 match unbeaten run last year. So they're going to need something like that to crawl out of the basement here. Harry over in the chat asked, bigger disappointment, Colorado Springs or El Paso? And it's my initial thought was El Paso, but Colorado Springs is pretty disappointing right now. I mean, winless through three or resultless through three, basically. And it's a little rough, but I still think I'm going to go Paso because they were, I think, projected to be a little bit higher.
Well, looking at our predictions here. Yeah. So, Jacob, you had Colorado at 5. Earl had them at 4. I had El Paso at 5. Jacob, you had them at 7. Harry had El Paso at 5. Switchbacks. And Harry and I both had Switchbacks at 6. To me, honestly, when I look at these two teams, I have to say Switchback. I really do. You know, they despite the changes, I felt pretty confident in what they were going to do this year. They've looked really good the past couple of seasons, and we've seen them absolutely show flashes of brilliance. El Paso, yeah, they... Yes, they brought in Amando Moreno. Yes, they brought in a couple of guys, but they lost a lot of talent too. And I was genuinely curious to see what was going to happen with them this season. But for me right now, the bigger surprise is Colorado. And I have to think that they're going to find a way to turn that around. I mean, Earl, when you look at it, when you look at our predictions so far, if you look at the results we've seen, what stands out to you in the Western Conference?
Well, I mean, I was pretty high on Colorado. I mean, I have them sitting in fourth. So seeing them with three losses, I mean, obviously, mud's on my face over here because there I was. But really, I mean, it's hard to make a takeaway from this because, I mean, three matches in. Unless you're El Paso, you're looking at four matches, which I wasn't high on El Paso anyways. Even with the Amando Moreno signing going to El Paso, I still wasn't high on it because El Paso is still going to be El Paso. They're going to have a good run. They're going to not. They're going to have a good run, then they're going to fall off. And that's just how El Paso plays their seasons. So, I mean... I'm still pretty set on my picks, on how I have my finals going. That's just where I'm at.
Yeah, so Harry, to your point, how they only played one match. Yeah, they started a week after everyone else, and they don't play again until the 30th. So, yeah. I don't know how they manage their schedule that way, but I think they have a couple midweeks coming up that other folks don't, but yeah, I don't know. It's interesting to see where everyone's at really. And obviously we've already mentioned there's a lot of time there's a lot of things left to happen within the season, and this could all change. You know, we look at this, you know, Phoenix is a team that, you know, you're kind of curious because they brought in some talent as well. Okay. And two losses and a win. And Phoenix is absolutely a team that can turn that around. You look at their upcoming matches, obviously us against Phoenix next week. Then they have Tulsa, Colorado Springs, and I hate how this does that. Colorado Springs and then Pittsburgh, which, by the way, heading over to the East, what is going on with Pittsburgh? That I have to ask, because that to me was really surprising. Now, yes, they lost a lot of talent. You lose Albert Dequa, you lose, you know, the pieces that they did. I have no idea what's going on there. They're certainly not playing the defensive as well defensively as we've seen in the past. And I just don't know what to think about them. I don't really think about them. Rhode Island comes in. They've looked good in both their matches. Two draws out of both of them. Any surprises out of the East? What stands out here for you guys?
I think if you're looking at just where they're at on the table, obviously Pittsburgh is a surprise. To me, the bigger surprise is almost Tampa Bay right above them. Or who do they have? They have Rhode Island and then... Okay, so it's different on depending on where you look, because I think the way they handle ties is different in different places, even though that doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. But still, Tampa Bay only has 2 points on the season. Granted, they've only played 2 matches, same as Rhode Island. So just to see them below the playoff line is a little surprising. And then other than that, I've got Detroit City, 2 wins and 2 tries. I mean, I had them missing the playoffs. I thought when they beat Colorado Springs that it was kind of a fluke, and Colorado Springs just isn't necessarily that good. But then they go out and they score 2 goals at home against a Loudoun team that I am pretty high on and pretty impressed by. And so the way they hung around long enough to steal those 2 goals in the second half really impressed me a little bit, and I might have been wrong on Detroit City.
Earl, anything for you?
I mean, no, not really. I mean, I don't really watch Eastern Conference. I tried watching, I don't know who I tried watching. I think it was Pittsburgh today, and it was pretty bad. Eastern Conference play is kind of boring for me. It's quiet and slow and super, super low scoring. So,
I mean, an Eastern Conference opponent just put 4 on us, but yeah, low scoring.
I mean, tell that to slow and boring, you know, tell that to Rhode Island.
Rhode Island is not slow and boring. No. Rhode Island is definitely
Rhode Island. I will watch any Rhode Island match. That's for sure. I decided to pick a different team today while I was bored at work, and I picked Pittsburgh of all teams, and it was pretty bad.
Well, that was your mistake.
Yeah, I know.
Because even when Pittsburgh is good, they're boring.
Yes, I mean, looking at where we picked and where things are at now, I mean, obviously, as of right now, we're all way too high on Rowdies. I'm way too high on Pittsburgh, so that may end up being my biggest miss of the year if they don't turn that around. And Justin's point, our win against the bottom of the East, well, I mean, yeah. Still a long, long way to go. And then,
I expect Pittsburgh to still be struggling, but Rhode Island is not going to be down there for long. And Charleston is, you know, 4th right now. So it's not – it looks bad on paper, but if you actually look into how those teams are playing, Rhode Island is playing really well. Pittsburgh not playing really well, but they're probably the one thing that's like, yeah, we beat them here, and that is definitely what we should have done. And I expected that from the get-go. I think I have Pittsburgh, 9th there?
Yeah.
And so it was definitely on paper a match that we should have won. And the other two, like I've got Charleston and Rhode Island 3 and 4. So both home playoff teams in the East by my predictions. So I'm not freaking out about our results on paper, and I think everything will kind of slowly level off eventually.
Yeah, that's one of the great things about having a season as long as ours is. You get to play everyone twice, and then the Eastern Conference, you know, you get to play a number of teams over there once. So, you know, it's we've got a long, long way to go. We keep saying it. You know, obviously there is no panic button being hit. There are some questions as to what's going on with the midfield. Where are we at injury-wise? Obviously, Abu Dunladi was out again last week. We're waiting to see when his return is going to be. We're also waiting to see when Christian Nava is going to be back, and with potential injuries to Kalen Rydin and Alex Tambakis. A couple questions heading into the next weekend, especially when we go against rival Phoenix Rising FC. Again, on the road, another match away from home for New Mexico United. Now, like you said, Jacob, fortunately, this is one that we're not traveling across the country for. Now, the flight to South Carolina was not quite as bad as the travel to Rhode Island, but you look at the travel and the toll that kind of takes on a team. How much of a factor does that play in your initial thoughts as we head into Phoenix this weekend, where there's likely going to be a large number of New Mexico United supporters out of Wild Horse Pass or wherever their stadium is now?
I thought he asked you the question.
Oh, did he? Sorry.
Yeah, I did.
I'll go. It's fine.
It's your question, yeah, dude. Like,
it's been a long week, 2 weeks since I've been on. Travel plays a big part. I just traveled, and it wasn't nearly to the East Coast. And now I did it with four kids and a mom and my wife. And so that, I think not going to the East Coast, traveling with that many people makes up for it. That many people that I'm in charge of, essentially. And so it was exhausting. And so to do that twice in a row, even though they were flying and playing a tough physical team in Rhode Island and then a really talented team there in Charleston, I think affects it quite a bit. And so to now turn around, go to a place that we have played a lot, obviously, an Open Cup match or two there, and playing them twice during the non-COVID seasons. I think we played them once over there during a non-COVID or during the COVID season when we weren't in the same division or whatever the hell it was. You guys realize that was 4 years ago, right? Like it feels so long ago. Mm-hmm. But and so it's going to be easier. We're going to be more familiar with being there and the travel associated with going there, and the stadium atmosphere and everything like that. As you mentioned, Seth, the bus is going to be going. Hopefully it fills up all the way. I think it's close right now. And so we'll have a lot of fans there. It'll be a fun trip for them that are going. I wish I could make it, but just can't do it. So for those of you that are, support us well. I know you guys will. And so it's going to be easier for sure. And I expect a different outcome than especially, two buses. Sorry. I missed where they added a bus. So yeah, a lot of people are going to be there. It's going to be a good time. It'll be different than going to Charleston or Rhode Island for sure. And I think that plays well for us.
Earl?
Yeah, I like it's nice because obviously we did two cross-country trips back-to-back. So being able to travel the 8 hours, I think the trip is for them. And if they hop on a plane, it's, I think, 2.5.
It's literally I've like
never flown to Phoenix, so I've never flown to Phoenix, so I couldn't tell
you. You muted, Jacob.
I was just saying it was nothing.
Yeah, I mean, even at that, 2.5 hour flight's not bad.
Half an hour flight.
Yeah.
30 minutes. That's it.
Up and down. That's all it is.
So, I mean, having that is kind of like a reward for being able to go cross country twice. I mean, yeah, you got handed to your second trip out to the East Coast. But I mean, we've always played well at Phoenix, except for one match where we lost 5-2. We've always played well against Phoenix. So I'm excited about it. I can't wait. Hopefully we can get back on the good side of things and pick up a win. It's not likely, but hopefully we can.
If it's unlikely, Earl, tell us why.
Because I've been busy.
All right.
Hold on.
Earl's been working on something, and he kind of gave me a sneak preview of this earlier.
Oh no.
I'll show everybody right now. You're not aware of this. So I realized the past few weeks I've made some pretty the past few years, let's be honest, I made some pretty terrible predictions. So with those terrible predictions comes me getting better. And I have made my own, like I said a couple weeks ago, I made my own spreadsheet to where Jacob's freaking out over here. And I'm not sure he understands what's going on here. So what I've been trying to do is get myself better, obviously. With Jacob going out, I had to step up. And with Jacob coming back, I still had to stay there because he's now the new Earl. Because he takes off on vacations and shows up late and just does his own thing. Am I muted yet? Not yet. No. Oh, we're good. I'm surprised.
There it is. Now you're muted, Earl.
There we go. So what I did is I made my own prediction, my own. Well, I got off of YouTube and I made it my own with the USL instead of what they had for the Premier League.
What is
happening?
And
here what we have. So when you enter the results for each week, it calculates the home and away points, and it makes a table for you, does all the fun stuff, makes your average goals from the league. And then on this page here, it is the fun part because you plug in the home team, you plug in the away team. It's going to give you the attack rating for each team and the probability of that team to win, along with the probability of it being a draw. So if Phoenix were to score zero goals, they have a 63% chance to come out with a point. Same thing with United. It drops crazily for both teams. If each team scores 1 point, it's 26. And as you can see from here on out, it goes down. So, like I said, it's very unlikely. It's unlikely for United to make a win or to get a win because of this number here. So 20% chance for Phoenix to win if they score one goal. A 16% chance for United to win if they score one goal. And it's cut almost in fourth, by a fourth, if they score two goals. So, that's that.
Jacob, what's your reaction to Earl mathing?
Sorry, hold on, I'm having a stroke.
So while you're still having the stroke, I will also show you something cool because it is with every team in the league. So for example, this result would be different if United would have picked up their win on this side. So we could even do 5-0 for United on this side. That probability jumps crazy on this end.
Interesting.
I think I lost Jacob.
No, I'm here. I'm just... I didn't know we had John Morrissey on this podcast right now. And much like a lot of John Morrissey's predictions, who I love, by the way, he is not a robot. They are not guaranteed. So we're going to win.
So, Earl, aside from your fancy predictor here, what is it about Phoenix, or what is it about us, with how each team has played so far this season, that gives you the belief that United is not going to pick up a win on the road or even a point?
Oh, I didn't say that. I said it's unlikely. I didn't say that. But in great Earl fashion, I always have the crazy takes. But to answer your question, because we obviously have a question on the table now. I think that this past Saturday in Charleston for United, it was kind of worn off. You don't really, that's not what you're going to expect to see from United every week. I think they bounce back and they take care of business and they do their thing. On the Phoenix side, I mean, Phoenix usually plays well against United as well. It's just one of those rivalries that makes you play better. So, I mean, I'm going to put my players to watch out there. I'm thinking Hurstie making his homecoming back to Phoenix. I think he makes an impact. I think he scores at least one. And then for Phoenix, I did a double-sided sword over here. For Phoenix, Jose Andres Hernandez, he's returning from last year. And right now he has 84% of the touches. So, I mean, he's a staple for the offense to pass the ball. I don't like this match just because of the way we played last week. So sitting on sour grapes, you're still sitting with it in your pocket there. But I think our defense steps up and does what they need to do. And I'm going to throw my prediction out there right away, and I'm saying 0-0.
0-0. All right, Jacob. When you look at this match, when you look at how we play, look at how Rising has played, you look at just the areas where we've failed the past 2 weeks. Should Kalen Rydin make his return on Saturday against Phoenix Rising, do you think we shift back to a four at the back for this match? And how much of a difference do you think that makes, particularly against the team that returns the likes of, like Errol mentioned, Jose Hernandez and Darius Formella?
So you mentioned three at the back against Charleston. I didn't see it that same way. I still saw the four with the two wingbacks bombing up and one of them staying home at times and one of them attacking. So I don't feel like it's changed. I don't feel like it changed drastically between Rhode Island and Charleston, or Pittsburgh and Rhode Island for that matter. So I think we keep that same type of system no matter who's in there. But if Kalen's in there, I think it changes it dramatically. And I really hope that he is, because I would feel way more confident. Because one thing that I didn't bring up when we were talking about Kalen earlier, we talked a lot about his defensive work and his leadership and stuff like that. One thing that really helped open Pittsburgh up was his distribution from that back line and his ability to make some diagonal passes and make the right decision when pressure was there to get out of pressure, but not just get out of it, but get out of it in an attacking fashion. And so he's needed not only to anchor that back line when Phoenix has the ball, but also to make some line breaking passes and some good decisions when we're in possession, especially when we're trying to build up out of the back, much like we did against Charleston, that kind of bit us in the ass a couple times. And so he's important in multiple facets of this match. And so if he's not there, I think my prediction changes. But if we're assuming he's going to play and he's going to be healthy, which is a big assumption because we haven't heard anything as far as what is going on with him. And that makes me a little nervous. But assuming he plays, I'm going to say 2-1 us. And I think it's a pretty comfortable 2-1 win, if there is such a thing. If he doesn't play, then I'm thinking 1-1, 1-0, Phoenix winning, which is blasphemous for me. So I'm going to say 2-1 us as my official scoreline prediction, even if he doesn't play, because it's me. But I do think that it's going to be a much better showing regardless of if he's in there or not, for multiple reasons. And I think this team has enough talent and enough people that care and a coach that's good enough to light a fire under them that after you get walloped 4-0, you're automatically going to come out with a little more drive and a little more want to perform better. And I think that'll show no matter who's in our starting 11, and we'll at least have a better performance, whether that leads to 3 points or not, I don't know. But with Phoenix playing the way they are now, their record is a little misleading. It took 8 saves by Van Okel for Birmingham to get the win opening week. And so they played really well in that match. I didn't watch their second match against, oh crap, I don't remember who their other loss was to. But I think they probably are playing a little bit better than their 1-0-2 record indicates. Modern. So it's going to be a good game. It always is. Like Earl said, it's always close. It's always, both teams tend to play their best unless there's COVID involved. And so it's going to be an interesting one. Monterey Bay was the other team that beat them, and Monterey Bay looked really good in that match. So they probably should have lost that one. They probably should have got a draw against Birmingham, and they probably should have got the win against Oakland that they just had. So they're pretty much where they should be, maybe a point behind where they should be, which would put them right there with us. So I'm looking at a pretty even match. It's going to be pretty tight. You know it's going to get chippy. You know the fans don't like us, which is fine with me. And so it's going to be a fun one. I'm excited for it. I'm glad it's 8:30 because I can put the kids to bed, and then I can just sit and enjoy the game without having to worry about this, that, or the other, which is the first time that's happened on a match that we've watched, because we've played at freaking 2 and then at 5:30. And so sometimes I complain about those West Coast times, but I'm looking forward to it right now.
Yeah, the later start time is definitely going to be good. I'll be sitting down watching the match with my girlfriend on Saturday, so can't wait to do that.
What? She's coming to town?
She'll be here. Yep. She'll be here.
Notice how it's a weekend that we're all busy doing something that we can't go meet
her. I told you guys the other day, I said something in our chat. I said, if you're going to be in town, let me know.
I said, so I didn't get that text. Do something. It's Easter.
Harry, did you get that text, Harry? I'm sure Harry got the text.
Harry's not going to be in town anyways.
Nobody got either the text, way,
girl. Nobody got the text. See, even Harry knows. But no, I'm going to try to be quick here because I do have one final question for you guys before we get out of here. But I look at this match, and to me, a lot of it's going to depend on, see, Harry got the text. A lot of it to me is going to depend on what happens at the back, and do we have the distribution, and do we play it out? Do we sit back? Do we try to play out of the back? Do we play a bit more direct, which early against Charleston Battery looked pretty good for us, you know? And so I see that, and I see the lack of distribution, the lack of involvement that, hey, there she is. She's in the chat. y'all are welcome to join us. The lack of distribution, the lack of involvement from Sergio Rivas, the lack of involvement from Marco Micheletto, which, you know, not his fault. You know, I look at it, and that's where everything's going to have to come from, and it's going to have to generate things for United. I think going on the road, I think we have a chance at this one, since we have an opportunity to stay at home, have a shorter trip, and get the guys some rest and get a full week's worth of training in. I think this match plays a lot better for us. I think we'd come out with a chip on our shoulder. And as you said, Jacob, this is a chippy rivalry. The match is going to be physical. It's going to be chippy. I was honestly surprised we finished last weekend with, you know, 22 people on the pitch. So it'll be interesting to see if that happens this weekend or not. But I think Quill's going to have them ready. I think we're going to be ready to go. I think United goes into Phoenix Rising Stadium at 38th Street in Washington and picks up a win. Hi, Rachel. Welcome in. I'm going to say 1-0 United. I don't think it's quite as comfortable. I think we play better. I think we see better play from the midfield, better from the back. And I think this is an opportunity for us to right the ship early in the season and get some more momentum going back into the lab the following week. So
before your question, real quick, mm-hmm. Since Rachel popped in the chat, I said we would do this a couple weeks ago, and then we haven't. Rachel's daughter, Day, who you guys may remember from the Somos Unidos news page. She had a page there. She interviewed players and coaches for us. Since then, we know she's been acting and doing plays and stuff like that here. Well, Rachel told us a few weeks ago that she got a part in a pretty major motion picture with some pretty A-list celebrities in it. And she's going to be, I believe, a lead child character in it. And so I want to shout out Day and Rachel and congratulate them on that, because it's definitely not just Day. It's definitely Rachel that has given her the ability to do that and the path where she can actually go and enjoy and do those type of things. So shout out to both of you guys. We love you and love to see and success for you guys.
Congratulations.
That's and awesome. On that note, if you're not doing anything April 26th, 27th, and 28th, Rachel, if I'm wrong, correct me, please. Please show up to the Cardboard Playhouse. She's doing a play there where she will be seen. Definitely go support her as you can. I'm going to try to make it out. That is my birthday weekend, so I'm going to try to make it out. I'm not sure what the other one has planned for me.
Rachel, put the info in the chat for us. Put the info in the chat. That way people can go check it out. But that's really cool. That is really cool. Congratulations. I know you're happy. I know you're excited. I know Day's excited as well. That's really, really cool. We appreciate you and everyone being here in the chat. Like that's really cool. And if we will do everything we can to get out to support you. So my question for you guys, and we'll try to make this quick, the CONCACAF Nations League just wrapped up, Nations Cup, Nations League, whatever you want to call it. And the U.S. won 2-0 over Mexico once again in the final. Is there anything worth taking away from this tournament? The U.S. did not play well against Jamaica and it took a last gasp winner equalizer to even send that one to extra time against Jamaica. Is Berhalter's job safe for now? Do we keep Berhalter? Do you think Berhalter should be addressing podcasts that are positing just theories?
Fucking leave Berhalter alone. My God.
I'm just curious.
It's like the most scrutinized position in the fucking world is the U.S. manager. And for no reason, because guess what? We have no history. We're not that great historically. We have a good group of players here. He has put a good group of players together. Gio Reyna has come in and looked really good this tournament because of what happened at the World Cup. It's not an accident that shit like that happened. And so, yes, the Jamaica game was questionable. But at the end of the day, what happened? We get the last minute goal. We get two goals in extra time. We put it away handily in extra time. We move on. We kick Mexico's ass, who I don't think Mexico is very good. But we kicked Mexico's ass pretty handily. And at the end of the day, we have another trophy under Berhalter, which if I remember the stat correct, we have more trophies under Berhalter than we have the last three coaches before him combined. And we have a talented group that by going in and fighting till the very end against Jamaica prove that they like playing for Berhalter, at least somewhat. Because guess what? If you're losing 1-0 to Jamaica in the 95th minute, if you don't want to play for that coach, you're not going to show the kind of effort that we showed all the way through that thing. So just get off his back. He's secure for now. We'll see what happens in Copa America coming up. And if we lay an egg there, then maybe we can talk about it. But I don't think we're going to lay an egg there because we have a good freaking team with a coach that has them playing good soccer. It's not always pretty soccer. It might not be the best looking soccer that you want for the USA team to play, but it's going to win us matches. Is it going to win us enough matches? I don't know, but it's we're fine. It's fine. It was a good showing. After we get that equalizer, it was a great showing against Mexico. Mexico couldn't do a damn thing for the majority of that match. They were just outclassed. And proves again, like, whatever you want to say about the last World Cup, we are the kings of CONCACAF. Like, There's nobody in CONCACAF that is at our level right now. We've proven that over the last 3 years. And so it really comes down to how we play in like the Copa America, and how we play against friendlies against other teams that are going to be in the World Cup, and then ultimately how we perform in 2026. And so as far as I'm concerned, Berhalter has that job through 2026, unless like we just go on like an insane losing skid. And until then, I would really like if everybody that's on Twitter and talks about soccer professionally will just get off Berhalter's back and let the dude do his job. I don't care how he got the job. I know that's a big contention of nepotism bullshit. I don't care. He's fucking winning right now, and let him win without scrutinizing every little minute thing that he does. Sorry, I'll get off my soapbox. Go ahead.
That's right. Cardboardplayhouse.org shows and tickets. Go check out, get tickets there. Go see Day. Go support her and Rachel. And Rachel, we love you. Appreciate you being here as always. Earl, dos a cero. Anything to be concerned about with this national team currently?
Nope. What I'm concerned about is the 2 minutes past due that's past my bedtime.
Sorry, that's my fault. I didn't know we were going to talk about that. And then he mentioned Berhalter, and it like I had Twitter PTSD flashbacks of everybody bashing Berhalter after the Jamaica match, and just freaked out for a second. I apologize.
Alrighty. So, all right. Yeah, there we go. United States men's national team, CONCACAF Nations League champions. Was very curious to see what you guys thought about that. Obviously Copa is coming up next, and then the, I'd say World Cup qualifying, but we don't care about World Cup qualifying this time around. So,
maybe not get into qualifying with a different nation to see kind of how we stack up. Maybe it's South America and it's kind of like the Copa America all over again, but I think mm-hmm. it'd be nice to do like Europe and UEFA or something like that, World Cup qualifying, and see how we do over there. But I don't know how well it works.
All right. Well, there we go. We are past Earl's bedtime. We've been told we have to go. So we appreciate everyone.
You guys can stay. I'm not sure guys. I'm not controlling you guys.
Jacob, get us out of here.
Sounds good, guys. Sorry, I was late, a couple minutes late there. I really enjoy this 8 o'clock time, but man, is it a task to get the kids down. Sometimes they're easy. Sometimes it's not as easy like tonight. So I will be better next week for sure. Thank you, everybody over in the chat. Justin has he's one. I'm sure you might have watched some before, Justin, but I know you entered the kit contest, and then since you've entered the kit contest, you've been pretty active in the chat, and I really appreciate that. Rachel, as always, Harry, the guy who shan't be named, Christina, everybody else, you guys are the best. Like having you guys in there and doing that, letting us know that you care and that we're not just doing this to argue amongst ourselves and have a good time. So we really appreciate you guys. Be sure to check out the podcast player of your liking and rate and review us there, of course, and come back next week. We will hopefully be breaking down 3 points from Phoenix and looking ahead to the next home match on April 6th against El Paso, which is El Paso's next match, by the way. They're off until then, which last year, I'm relatively sure, both times we played El Paso, they had a bye week before we played them. And I thought that was kind of bullshit. And so to have that again this match, thinking it's kind of bullshit, but it is what it is. We'll still beat their ass, hopefully. And so we'll be talking about Phoenix, then we'll be previewing El Paso, and we will be united in our abilities theme on 4-6. Thank you, Christina. We'll talk about that more next week for sure. And so next week, next Tuesday, 8 o'clock, join the three of us. We'll be talking about 3 points, looking ahead to El Paso. And until then, guys, Somos Negros. Love you.
You've been listening to Somos Mas, your source for the latest news and notes on New Mexico United, the USL, and the New Mexico Runners. All of our shows are recorded live on Tuesday nights and are streamed on our YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter pages. An audio-only version of the show goes live later in the week on all major podcast platforms. Our show is written and produced by Seth Bidoff, Jacob Terrell, and Earl Nieto, and is edited by Seth. All episodes are recorded and edited using StreamYard and Audacity.